All right, good to be back with you. Again, my personal gratitude to Wade for carrying the class last week. And he says, I put it back in the car, but I imagine you enjoyed the ride. Right? I mean, let's just not talk about just waxing it back up. So if you remember, a couple weeks ago, we read Genesis chapter 1. We're going to live in the text of Genesis 1 and 3. So if you want to have your Bibles in there, we can use that regularly. I just had enough time at the end to read what I call the creation poem. This invitation into the ancient mind of the people of God saying, we want to tell you where we all begin. And the language is important in that text to kind of frame how do we understand God. And in some ways, we'll get to chapter 3 where we get the real dialogue going on. But I really want to spend just this week and possibly, no, really just this week looking at, well, why does the Bible, why does Genesis, why does the Pentateuch, the most important five books of the Jewish imagination that set the tone for so much, right? The reception of God's law to us. Why do they start here? How can this help us understand what it means for God to speak to us? And the way I want to think through that is through a meditative exercise. So this will be a little different to do in meditation in class. I'm sure you've probably had moments here and there when somebody has led one, and we'll do a similar exercise. I'm going to talk through, normally I kind of get you going with me, but I'm going to talk through a couple of setters for this, and then we'll go through an exercise, and then we'll have our normal kind of dialogue conversation while we're teaching. But one of the things that you'll notice in the text with Genesis, of Genesis chapter 1, is that we have this repetition of language of let there. So, unlike the Ten Commandments, where God just kind of does 10 words, know this, know this, know this. We have this language with almost a passive voice of God saying, let there. So it's quite different than me telling my child, you will, versus let us. So when we're given the creation account, I want to attend to this language a little bit and think about when it's presented to us, God is speaking into the void and saying, let there. And then the second key term that'll kind of help set up our meditation is this word, good. Repeated through the poem. You're meant to hear this. Every time something is called into existence by God, out of the formlessness, out of the darkness, it is not only a let there, but it's also good. Okay? And then the third element that's important in the poem, and you can't put it down necessarily on a word, but I'm going to use one to capture it. Particular. So when God says, let there be light, it is different than the dark. Let there be land. It separates from the waters. So if we're to understand who we are, being made in the image of God, it is a let there. It is a good. And it's particular. So there's something to this idea of listening to creation through the eyes and ears that you have. Try to experience God, not in the sense of this general cosmic truth that I just choose to accept as a tenet of reality, but I think even in the creation poem, there's this invitation to listen to the very good that God has called into being by letting it emerge, and that it matters that it's different from this to this. Okay? So that was just introductory comments. Now the exercise I want to take you on, let me ask kind of a probing question. I'll lay out the groundwork of what it's going to look like. It'll be short, 5-10 minutes at the most, so it's not going to consume all of class. But what I want to do is kind of invite you to reflect on a very good place that you have found in life. I want to use, and this is where I need your input a little bit, I want to use something that's actually a creation kind of place. So when I say that, some place in nature that you have found in your life where you go, you know, when I'm in this place, there's a sense of connection and transcendence to it, wherever that might be. Is that an idea that is easy to tap into for everybody in here? Because if it's not, I've got other alternatives. But can I kind of see either heads or nods? Frank, I can't do that. I hate creation. Right? Okay. All right. So if that's something that's amenable to you, then let's use that as kind of the template that I want you to look for. All right. And then let me explain kind of what the meditation is about. It's a pretty simple meditation based on what the poem is giving us to make available to us. But I'm going to invite you in just a moment to go ahead and close your eyes and to be still. So we'll take, 30 seconds to a minute to kind of feel a little quiet. And then I want you to find this place that I'm talking about, wherever that might be. So it could be some place that you haven't visited in a long, long time. It could be a place that you have found a way to access regularly that is kind of your space, so to speak. And then after we arrive there and you say, yeah, I'm kind of there, you don't have to say that audibly, but I'll kind of cue you and say, okay, everybody's kind of in their place at this moment. I'm just going to ask you to engage your senses about what you see. But I want you to use your senses in light of the poem. Let there. It is good. It's particular. Okay? So, and I'll watch kind of body language. I'm going to have my eyes open. You can close your eyes or open them. Most people try to block out stuff with visualizations like this, but if you're an open-eyed visualizer, you probably are not paying attention anyways to what I'm doing. You probably have something else going on, but whatever posture you need to kind of create this little space for 5 or 10 minutes, does that sound like an okay exercise? And that'll help us to talk about why creation might be presented this way, since we're made in the image of God. All right. So that's the idea. So go ahead and just find a comfortable body position. Usually feet on the floor, joints feel pretty relaxed, hands rested on the legs usually helps people a little bit. And then if you want to close your eyes to help you visualize where you're going to go, feel free to do that. If you have other ways of keeping that visual for you, then go ahead and use those. And let's just take just a few seconds to be quiet. Now, in this stillness that's kind of settling over you and the quiet that you're creating in this moment that we have together, I want you to go ahead and travel to that place that I mentioned just a while ago. A place that you may not have visited in a long time, or perhaps a place that you see often. A place that is near to where you are. Perhaps it's a place that's far, but go ahead and enter into that place. And we'll just stay here for a few seconds before we look around. Now you can sense that you're really there for a minute. You remember this place well. It's familiar. It's open. And now I want you, with your heart's eye, look around. What do you see in this place? Look far away. From where you are, look very close, look up and down, and just move a little bit and take in everything that you can see. eyes full of this place. I want you to pay attention to your skin and your sense of touch. Is there a wind that's blowing? Is there a temperature quality that you can feel that change from where we are here in Tennessee when you go to this place? Does the light of the sun press down on your skin? Or is it gray and quiet and cold? And now that you can see and feel this place, and maybe you can reach with your hand and touch something close and remember the feeling of that object, I want you to think about your sense of smell. Are there things in this place that you can smell? And how does it affect your heart? A scent in the air, a scent of some food maybe that's off in the distance, scent of nature itself, flowers, a fragrance. Something that when you're in this place, that scent calls you up and settles you into this joy. Now let's turn to your sense of hearing. What sounds are here that remind you of this place? Where do they come from? Is it an animal? Is it the motion of the wind? Is it motion of water? What do you hear? And now finally, and this may not be true for every place, but sometimes there's a taste to a place. When I go to the coast, I taste the brine in the air. For a moment, when you're in this place, think about your sense of taste. Is it affected by being here? Does it desire things here? to see a long ways. In the quiet, you get out of where the noise in the community is, and there's a quiet that comes with doing that. And then snow itself quieting the ground, if you've ever experienced that. We used to cross-country ski as kids, and you would get out there when the snow was hitting, all you could hear was the snow tapping on the snow. There was no other sound in the forest, just the kind of stuff. So, all right, let's keep talking. We can use our particular experience to kind of explore this a little bit, but I really want you to think about theologically. I mean, are we just playing with our minds here? Or is there something theologically that we've kind of can experientially tap into a little bit about this is what it kind of means to be human based on the way the poem is given to us? Okay. What else?
A sense of belonging, like you're part of.
Ah, yeah, good. Yeah, yeah. So the connectedness. Yeah, boy, this is really important. When it comes to Christian imagination, it lives in a place. It doesn't live out in the ideal world. It's, this is the place I find myself. And so the story of Christ lives out in a very particular way, in a very particular place. So this exercise gives us a sense of, he put us in a garden, not in the clouds, to experience the garden. Intentionally. Or did he make a mistake? I mean, that's a fair theological question. You know, did God kind of goof with the creation thing? Was he kind of, you forgot about this thing, God, you know, when he did that. All right. What else? This exercise might help you to kind of appreciate about being human and in creation. Yes? Yeah. This actual outcome to come out?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so in theology we might talk about kind of a cosmic and a local, right? So there's cosmic things that you're aware of, but to get down to local, you know that as a human being, ultimately we do have to kind of live here, right? We don't necessarily, or design maybe even, to live just at a cosmic way of talking about life. And this is why we did Job on the front end, right? Because Job's asking those local questions. What else is interesting about this exercise? That I saw another comment here. Yeah.
I was saying it made me think of layers and how they all fit together or feed on each other.
Mm.
I guess it was that connection.
But even in creation itself, did you feel that sense of your own sensory perception was able to? Boy, the wind and the feel of the grass actually have something to do with one another. Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. See, part of the difficulty, I'll get you a second, part of the difficulty with growing up in a scientific or a modern worldview is that we're taught to dissect. So this is only this thing. This is not this thing, right? But the way that the creation story is presented, I think, is this kind of weaving of creation. It's all kind of playing with each other and moving around, and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking about this, introducing this for the first time, the let there be light and all, I kind of felt like maybe it was God saying, I'm going to allow there to be light, I'm going to allow there to be land, I'm going to allow there to be sea and sky, and it is good. And good to me is more than just functional.
Yeah.
It means there's pleasure. There's
oh, yeah, good. Yeah.
It was God allowed there to be sand and water. It wasn't just functional, it was good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the beach may be there in a technical way to provide moisture for things to grow, so to speak. But when you sit on the beach in this exercise, you're going, there's something just good about this. And it's not because the beach has a job to do. Now, that may be important, but there's something good that in some ways is not bigger, but feels more significant, more beautiful. Can I use the word beauty? There's a beauty quality to it that instrumental good is not going to speak to. So you think about a job you really hate. When do you really hate a job? When your humanity is reduced to what? Function. When do you really feel inspired by a job? When you sense that it has purpose and connection to large things, yeah.
And the thing on that thought line is the
Yeah. And this is a hard thing to think about with God, but sometimes when you think about God being infinite, it's an intimidating realization, right? And we hear Scripture talk about God that way, that God's just bigger than we are. But the creation story says something interesting, that in the very fine detail of the place we find ourselves, God has spoken into it. Which is to say, you can pick up a blade of grass and the voice of God has touched that blade of grass. This is where Jesus would take us to the sparrow, wouldn't he? And he'd say, why do you think of God only as this vastness that doesn't know you? It's depersonalized. And Jesus would say, listen, if he counts the sparrows and maintains that and counts hairs on the head, which are three in my case, which is not a hard job, he's in the fine detail. And that the fine detail is a little window into the infinite nature of God, not exclusive of it. So when you pick up, say, a grain of sand, or a snowflake's probably a better example, right? That's the easy one. What's the thing about the snowflake? There's no two alike. But you got to get close enough to the snowflake to realize it's infinite in its own nature, and therefore more beautiful because I've picked up on something that goes past the use of the snowflake or the understanding of the snowflake scientifically, so to speak. Right?
Yeah, something that struck me about the exercise is when you told us to put everything in a box.
Yeah.
And when I started pulling it away and putting it in the box, everything just went blank.
Ooh.
It was almost like the reverse. It was like what God had, and then he created everything. And when we put it all in the box, it was just formless white in my mind.
Wow. Did anybody else have that? Did that happen with the box thing? I just made that up on the fly. That was kind of my, I'm like, I got to get them out of here. I got to get something. I put something to get them out of here because they're going to stay here and we won't talk about anything. So you felt, as soon as I put that in the box. Really? Did anybody else do this? A sad reaction? Oh, how cool is this? Yeah, I didn't even know. Anybody else with the box? Anything that was kind of like it shut down when I asked you to do that? So let me use a word for this, which again is so absent in our theology, and I think actually Patrick talked about it this morning. No, desire. When you are alive, desire is operating. And so when you went to that place, you were allowed for your desires to grab things. Because this is one of your favorite places to be. So if you were at the beach, it was the wind. And your desire said, I want to feel the wind. And I felt it. Huh? So when we shut it all down, we also said, forget your desire. However special this place is, I need you to come back. We have to do a Bible class. Right? So I think this is, yeah, I'll get you just a second. So I think this is part of the creation thing, right? Because in the garden, there's a sense that God says it's not just about the garden, like the technicals of the garden and how water comes up, it doesn't come down. But it's also about the satisfaction of desire. That look around, everything is good. It's all good. And then, in fact, there's a tree that says it's the tree of life. You want it? Life is good, man. You can snack on that. There's no obesity here. Just hit it hard. All the life you could want, you can have it here. All right. Go ahead.
Almost the opposite extreme, but I walked away thinking how easy it was to get there, and you drove us through that. It didn't take much time, which meant that I could go back any time. So for me, it was like, oh, this is an easy snack.
Yeah. So one thing I would say with that word, not only desire, boy, this is right up my dissertation. This is so cool. All right. But also, here we go, capacity. Human capacity. That what does it mean to be made in the image of God? Does it mean that I am designed to just tend the garden, build a hoe, rake the rose, pull out the thorns, or has God also given me this capacity to create other things? Or is that just a fluke? You know, and it depends, and this is why we did a little bit of work with the worldview stuff, right? Depends on how you see the world. If you think imagination is only a psychological stress mechanism that we imagine when we can't handle the stress of the local situation, then you won't see that God put a capacity in there to engage good. You won't hear it that way. However, if you think imagination is an act of spirituality, to say that not only does it matter where I find myself, but that I can have this ability to create worlds, so to speak, to enter into them, and that being human, I don't have to become an alien to do that. I can bring my humanity into that place and see new things. I get a sense that it's probably number two, that this ability that we have as human beings is important. So you don't want to present a spirituality that says, look at the here and now, what's the latest moral failing that you've had? What do you do when you fail morally? Get that fixed and then look down the road to the next thing. But you want to have, a broader understanding of what it means to be human so that when life turns as it does, you can ask kind of some different questions of, what other things has God given me to get me through this shadow and do it in community? So this is why the role of visualization for the Christians in the first century was so important. To say that they could see the residence where God would do what? Come down here, and when you walk in that city, how does it look? It's gold, man. It's filled with gems. Why do that? Is it just because he's toying with us? Or is it a nod to what it means to be human? To say, this is going to be important because when they go after you, that circumstance in the physical sense is not going to have a lot of options. But it doesn't mean God has left you dry. Right? It's the same thing that animates us when Paul is in prison and he's singing and he doesn't have any options. Why sing? Why create art in the midst of trial if it doesn't have an intrinsic value to affirm that let there be good here, right? In our culture, we have so much freedom, we can change our circumstances faster than pain and suffering. But what if you can't avoid pain and suffering? What if it comes and it locks you into a wall, into a room, and you're not going anywhere? Whether that's a disease, that's probably the one we can really access, right? But what if there's other forms of suffering where you can't just walk away? You can't pay your way out. It's there in front of you. What does it mean to be human? What were we created to be and to function? What does that mean? Does it have value? Okay, good. Other thoughts? Other reflections kind of on where we're going with this? Ah, good. That hadn't been here, has it? Right? And who or what is intimate about the experience when you're visualizing this way? What do you... Ah, okay, good. Yes.
And Jesus is with me.
Yeah, good.
And it's my intimacy and everything in my, it's a garden, and yeah. Everything in my garden was created for me.
Yes. Ah, so there's a sense of this is always available to me, and I know that God is faithful for this space that I'm creating here. Yeah. Yes, good. I want to ask the broader question, did anybody have God show up? One, no God. We have no God here. Any other God? Did God show up in some manner? Now, it may be that you don't see God in the sense of a figure but was it a spiritual experience? Let me broaden the vocabulary for you. So spiritual experience indicates something about what it means to be human, right? If I visualize this and I have a sense of transcendence, well, that might just be some transcendent kind of dude showing up in the space, right? So it's not just I can romantically envision something, but we're getting access to an intimate capacity to experience God in that setting.
Yeah. I didn't put everything in the box.
Well, I wish you had.
I just put some of the flowers and some of the birds and some of the grass. And I was on my back porch.
Oh.
And some of my coffee.
Yeah.
So that I can take some of it.
Anybody else have coffee? I got to know that one too. That's right. It is the divine drink. That is so good. Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, you didn't play by the rules, though. You were supposed to put everything in the box. Yeah, 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 yeah. That's... Yeah, yeah, no, you said, he told me to put it in the box. I can't just leave it out there. It's got to come back in, right? Okay. All right, good. That's helpful because in some sense you've been in this space before, not just physically, but this has become a resource for you where I always have it available, and you know what? Continuity. If I leave something over there, I know I can always get back there. Huh? Interesting. Okay. Yeah, good. I was looking for that reaction too. Did anybody kind of sneak it in the back, say, okay, I'll take this? All right. Nobody else? Did anybody else take the box with them? I told you to leave it on the ground. Would you take it with you? Okay, all right, all right. Say again? Yeah, sure enough. Yeah, exactly right, exactly right. And again, not so the you know what the box kind of reveals in some ways is the power of desire, doesn't it? So if you're making choices, right, where you're only taking a few things but you're not really playing by the rules, that shows you your desire too. And how valuable your desire is, and that you have created a spiritual practice where you say, I honor the desires that God puts in me. I invite God into the places where those desires live. So this isn't just about a really good cup of coffee, is it? No, it's an invitation. It's an invitation to say, God, be present in my life. And this is more of a concrete way for us to get our hands on what those experiences kind of feel like.
Yeah. Desire in you is part of his, you put that in us, otherwise you wouldn't see. So I felt like you are connected, you are being part of him because you're part of that creation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, fabric, I think that was some of the language too, woven together.
So you're automatically connected.
True enough. Yeah, true enough. Yeah, more of a web of connections and relationships that can't really be pulled apart because that's an artificial expression. Okay. Well, why were they letting the room? I didn't let you do that either, right? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, that's a nice image. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, so the analogy in the text is the snake gets into the garden and says, did God really tell you to look at the waves? Because over here, we're, okay, yeah, go ahead. I don't want to cut you off. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Ah, good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ah. Did anybody have anybody else? I'll let you go in just a minute. Anybody else have people show up? Okay, good. So one over here, one over here. This is interesting because it shows, in my opinion, an integration of desires personal and desires relational. And it also kind of reveals what's your tendency. When you want to feel most connected to God, where do you go? Yeah, that's an interesting kind of an illumination to say, my children show up because when I feel spiritual, I can't do it without them being in the waves with me. Right? Okay, good. Can I call it here? Is that all right? Does that stop the conversation? All right, very good. Good conversation. That was nice. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, very good.
See you next Sunday.
All right, yep, sounds good.